Now, back in the book of John, and we're in chapter 11, okay? And this is the chapter where it talks about the raising of Lazarus. And we're not actually going to get to that until next week, but we're starting, this is the transition, okay? It's just so you know, okay? The first half of John is sometimes called the book of miracles or the book of signs, because we've seen the seven miracles. This is the seventh one, the final one that Jesus does. Because John lays out a really, really great evidence for the divinity of Jesus in the first 10, 11 chapters. Okay, once we finish this next chapter, now we're going to move into the triumphant entry. Okay, we're going to move into Jerusalem for the very, very last time. Okay, but as I was working through this, I only got through like the first three verses in chapter 10, or excuse me, chapter 11. And I thought, you know, this is something that we need to talk about just a little bit. Okay, it's one of the things that God really emphasizes over and over and over in Scripture, is about the hospitality that we can offer to others and the way that we can represent Jesus Christ by doing that. Okay, and like I said, Jesus counted his entire ministry on the hospitality of others. He never had he had a home base, and Capernaum is where he would kind of live, but he didn't have a house, he didn't have a place to stay. He moved from place to place, and he counted on always the generosity and the hospitality of others. Okay, and like I said earlier, one of those, which was a regular stop whenever he was in Jerusalem, was the house of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Okay, so actually let's read the first three verses, and we'll kind of work from there.
A man named Lazarus was sick. He lived in Bethany with his sisters Mary and Martha. This is the Mary who later poured the expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. The brother Lazarus was sick. So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus and told him, Lord, your dear friend is very sick.
Okay. And so John brings up Mary and Martha, okay? And he says it's that same Mary that anointed his feet with perfume. Okay, so that's in chapter 12. We're going to get to that. Hasn't happened yet, okay? But let's go back, okay? Where do you remember Mary and Martha? Now, John, this is the first time John's ever mentioned them, but you find them in another gospel. Who are these women? Well, let's go ahead and flip over to Luke. Luke actually talks about another time where Jesus was there. And this is a lesson taught over and over and over again. I'm going to teach it in a little bit a different way. But let's go to Luke and read 38 through 42. So if somebody could read that for me. And by the way, you don't have to read it off the screen. It actually, you can get it on the Bible app now because we have the internet back in here. So but if somebody could read that for me. So it says, and I don't know whether this was the first time or whether it was another time, but they welcomed Jesus into their home. Okay, he stops at this village. He doesn't name it there, but that's Bethany. So as Jesus is going to Jerusalem, he would always stop at the home of Mary and Martha. Okay, and they would offer him hospitality. They would bring him in. Okay, now I'm not going to get into this too much, but okay, so today I'm hoping that I can change your mind about what hospitality really looks like. Okay, it's more than just providing a bed, and it's more than just providing a meal. In fact, you don't have to do either one of those to demonstrate real hospitality. Okay, so they invited Jesus in, okay, and they did cook for him. He did stay there, but more than that, okay, and he talks to the two sisters. One is providing nothing but service, okay, and that's a really great thing, but she misses out on what the other one experiences. Okay? Martha is busy prepping and doing all of this kind of stuff and basically has no real time for Jesus because she's preparing the meal, she's doing all of that kind of stuff. And certainly it's necessary. Okay? But Mary picks the greater blessing. Instead of doing all of that and worrying about all that stuff, she sits at the feet of Jesus. Okay? Because the case I'm going to make for you is that real hospitality is making someone feel significant and cared about. Okay? I talked about usually you get this double blessing when you offer hospitality and you bring somebody to your house. But it doesn't happen if you just offer a room like you're a motel clerk. Okay? And it doesn't happen if you just offer meals like you're a restaurant. Okay? It happens when you actually spend time with the person. You know what I'm saying? And when there's this interaction. Of all the people we've invited into our home, there was just one that we really felt like it didn't go very well. Okay? And that's because he treated us like we were a restaurant and a hotel. You know what I mean? And because of that, we didn't really feel like we got any blessing. And I don't think he was blessed nearly as much as he could have been. Okay? And in fact, we actually probably had a better relationship with him before because the only time we spent time together was deep interaction. And we kind of lost that when we invited him to our house, which was very unfortunate. Okay? Anyway, and that's where you get the Mary and Martha thing. Guys, we're really what hospitality means is being the Mary. Okay? It's spending time with someone. And sometimes that means offering them a place to stay. Sometimes that means offering them a meal. But mostly what that means is just demonstrating that you care. Okay? And you can do that without offering up those things. Maybe your house is too small. Maybe you don't have money. It doesn't take money. What it takes is time, and it takes a loving heart. Okay? And that's what true hospitality is. But let's kind of work through that just a little bit. Cora, go ahead and do the next one. So here's the map. And okay, so I'll just kind of point this out. So I showed you Jesus lives way up here, but he makes the pilgrimage all the way down on the other side of the Jordan River. Okay? And there are only a couple places where it was like narrow enough and shallow enough where you could easily cross. Okay? You see them marked here. But here was a road. And so the typical pilgrim crossed the Jordan here, where it was not so deep and not so wide. Okay? And they would end up going through Jericho. Then it's all uphill from Jericho. This is low. All the way up to Jerusalem. Okay? But Mary and Martha, they live in Bethany, outside of the city. Every time Jesus came into town in Jerusalem, he was like surrounded by needy people, people that wanted something from him, or the authorities that always wanted to argue with him. He's always in conflict or being buried by the needs of others. Okay, and so Jerusalem wasn't a really comfortable, safe place for Jesus to be. He couldn't just relax there. Okay, but at the home of Mary and Martha, he could. And whenever he left Jerusalem at the end of the days, because when he came there for these feasts, they were like week long. He would be in Jerusalem at the temple during the day. At night, he would slip out of town and go out into the suburbs, 2 miles out to Bethany, where he could just relax, okay? Where he didn't have to be on duty, so to speak. He wasn't constantly surrounded by needs and preaching and all that. He could just be. I'm sure he probably had some deep lessons for Mary and Martha, and some deep, it's like, oh my gosh, who wouldn't invite Jesus into their home? But they did. And that was the place that he always stayed. Okay? And so, before we go any farther with this hospitality thing, let's actually look at the book of Isaiah. And there's a whole chapter 58, talks about the difference between true worship and false worship. Okay? Because sometimes we get this idea that worshiping God means coming to church and doing the Bible study and doing this and doing this and doing this and doing this and doing all of these things that draw us nearer to God. Okay? And just don't get me wrong, those things are important, but all of those things are mostly about us. Anyway, let's go ahead and read this Isaiah passage. It's written to the Jews, but it's still relevant to us as well.
Yet they are so pious. They come to the temple every day and seem delighted to learn all about me. They act like a righteous nation that will never abandon the laws of its God. They ask me to take action on their behalf, pretending they want to hear me. Who have fasted before you? they say, why aren't you impressed? We have been very hard on ourselves and you don't even notice it. I will tell you why, I respond. It's because you are fasting to please yourselves. Even while you fast, you keep oppressing your workers.
Okay, and so God is addressing the Jewish people, and they're like, we're doing all of these things for you, Lord, and you're not noticing us, and you're not blessing us. And he says, basically, it's okay, so what you're doing is you're doing stuff for yourself. Okay? You're not actually serving me or worshiping me. I just put down, ouch. Oh, my goodness. Now, coming to church is really not what it's all about, guys. And all of those things that draw us near to God, like I said, are as important as they are for us. It's more than that, okay? Those things, really what they do is they equip us for God's work. But really what it's truly about, what true worship is doing the thing that God asks. It's actually doing God's work. You know, and I always feel bad for the ones that are so puffed up with all of the things that they have taken in. You know, it's like pigs at the trough. They eat and they eat and they eat and they give nothing back. Okay? At some point, guys, if you become mature as a Christian, and I've seen some people that are more Christian than Christians. Okay? Because they're willing to give. They're willing to allow the light of Christ to shine rather than kind of just keeping it all tucked in. Okay, so let's go ahead next and read James in chapter 2, verse 17.
So you see, faith by itself is any not, unless it produces good deeds. It is dead and useless.
Okay, now, lest we get confused with this, okay, this isn't about salvation. Salvation is by faith and faith alone. You don't have to do anything to earn salvation, to earn your right standing with God. Okay? But when you have faith and you allow Jesus to come into your heart and change it, it changes you in such a way that you want now to do the things that God asks. Okay? And so it shows up in good works. It's not good works results in salvation. It's salvation results in good works. It's that way. Okay, so don't ever get the idea that I have to do something to be saved. But nonetheless, when I am saved, little by little, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, I start to change from the inside out. And the things that I want to do, the desires change. And I start to serve God, not because I have to, because I want to. And there's a huge difference. You know what I'm saying? If you're doing things because you think that you have to for God, you're doing it for the wrong reason, and they're not God-honoring. Okay? And that's all about you. It's why you want to take credit. Understand what I'm saying? Okay? So things change a little bit. All right? Now back to Isaiah 58 again. Now verse 10. Go ahead. One of the things that Jesus asked us to do when he left is he said, while I'm here, I'm the light of the world. And once I leave, you are to be the light of the world. Okay? And one of the things that we can do to allow that light to shine, well, let's read that first part again. It says, feed the hungry and help those in trouble. That's how you let the light of Jesus shine. Okay? That doesn't happen so much here at church. I mean, it can. Okay? It doesn't happen so much in your Bible study. That's to equip you. That's to build you up so that you can do those things. Right? So that you can minister to others. That's how the light of Christ shines through you. It's the only way that it happens. So it's not just about being here. Although we are certainly glad you're here. Don't get me wrong. Okay? Go ahead. One more in Isaiah. Guys, in this one I had to put up there, so actually kind of for me, because sometimes I find relatives to be the hardest ones to minister to, because it just seems like they take you for granted, and sometimes they don't treat you very well and all of that. Maybe you guys know what I mean, maybe not, but it's like, and don't hide from the relatives. Okay. So, guys, the next question is, what is hospitality? And you guys have a kind of an idea of that. You know that it's, sometimes it means that you give to others what you have. You open up your home sometimes if you can. You provide meals for those that don't, that can't, or in a bad place, if you can. Okay? But sometimes that kind of relies a little bit on what God's given you as gifts. But I'm going to suggest to you that hospitality is something that we can all do. It doesn't mean that you have to have an extra bedroom. It doesn't mean that you have to have spare food or be a good cook or be able to go out to homeless shelters or any of that kind of stuff. Okay? It's something that we can all do and it doesn't cost anything. Okay? And it's been defined in a lot of different ways, but I like the way that Jesus defines it in Matthew 11. So,
then Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest."
So go ahead and flip to the next one. Okay? Okay, this is how I like to define hospitality. Okay? Giving rest to the weary. Okay? And so, like I said, it's not about being a hotel manager. It's not about being a cook for or opening a restaurant, you know, for the homeless. Okay? It's really about recognizing someone that is in need, someone that's weighed down by heavy burdens, and being able to give them rest. In other words, ministering to their needs at that particular time. Maybe it's a meal. Maybe it's a place to stay. Maybe it's a couch to sit on. But very often, guys, it's just an ear. It's the willingness to listen to someone and make sure that they understand, in the midst of everything that's going on, that there's somebody that cares about them. Okay? Now, it's always Jesus, and we can share that, but it should be us as well. Okay, we're the lights of the world now. Okay? Jesus is in heaven, and he's commissioned us to do the work that he started here. Okay? And so let me tell you, here's a story that I love to tell, and when I was back in Iowa, it just came to me because obviously, my grandparents, my grandpa and grandma Lot, were from Iowa. And when I'm back, I think about them sometimes. And although they didn't have real regular church attendance, it was very, very sporadic, they were two of the most godly people I know. In fact, my grandma Cora Lot, I named my daughter after her. Okay? And guys, here's the reason why. Okay? My grandparents didn't have anything. Really. They lost their farm in the Great Depression and moved from Kansas to Waterloo, where they got manufacturing jobs. Okay? They got had a small house, two-bedroom house. They raised five kids in a two-bedroom house. And for a great deal of that time, my grandma's parents lived with them. Okay, so if you're complaining about how small your house is, like, I need to get a bigger house because we got all these kids. It's like, they lived their whole life, two-bedroom house. Five kids. I don't know how they had five, but especially once you have a few, you know how difficult that can be. But the girls slept in with the same room as my grandpa and grandma, and the boys slept in the other bedroom, except when my great-grandparents lived with them, and then they were in the second bedroom, and the boys were on the living room floor. Okay? And they did just perfectly fine. Okay? And from that time on, their house was always filled with people. Always. Okay? Just telling how poor they were. My grandma used to tell me stories about, you know, back in the farm days, because they were great storytellers. She used to love to go over there and just listen to the stories. When they were in Kansas and they were losing the farm and they had the drought and the Dust Bowl and all of that stuff, you know, my grandpa worked for 50 cents a day. And it was from sunup to sundown. And the only reason he got a job is because he had a team of horses. If you didn't have a team of horses to thresh wheat, they weren't interested in you. But he worked for 50 cents a day, and he was super glad to have that because 50 cents a day is what it took to feed his family. They didn't leave any extras, didn't leave anything for that. And so they made everything. Like my grandma said, nothing ever went to waste. In those days, flour actually came in cloth sacks. I don't know if you guys remember that. I don't, but they did. And so the kids, all their clothes were made out of flour sacks. Can you believe that? And that was cool. Didn't make any difference because they didn't have any other ways of entertaining. And so the family always got together and they spent time until they lost the farm altogether and then they had to move out. Okay? So the one thing I remember about my grandparents was, number one, they never locked the door. Everybody was welcome. And number two, the fridge was always open. The kitchen was always open. Okay, my grandma cooked fresh bread every single day. So there was always a smell of, I don't know if you ever smelled fresh bread. It was so cool. And Sundays, she didn't cook bread, but she cooked cinnamon rolls. So she was up every morning at 3:30 preparing. It takes a while for flour, I mean, the dough to raise and all the rest of that stuff, but fresh bread every day. Okay? And they were married for 65 years. At the end of their life, at the end of all of the work that they had done for all of those years, okay, they ended up with little more than they started with. Okay, I remember my grandma died first, and my grandfather a little after that. Okay, our inheritance, everybody got back what they'd given to them, because my grandparents never bought anything. Everything they had, everything they owned, was a gift from somebody else. Okay, and so my inheritance, when my grandfather died, is I got two end tables and a coffee table that I made when I was working in a cabinet shop when I was in college, and I made for them, okay, and a rickety old couch that when I upgraded, I gave it to them, and they kept it for years after that, and that was one of the couches that they had. And so when my grandpa died, I got that stuff back. I gave it all away. The couch got hauled out to the trash because that's where it belonged. But and my boys got the furniture where they were, you know, living in apartments at the time, and they enjoyed that. But that's what we got. Okay. And the other thing I remember is, and just about all of us at one time or another spent some time there. Okay. More than a few wayward young men and women lived with Grandpa and Grandma for a while. Everybody called them Grandpa and Grandma, even people that we didn't even know, because that's who they were. Okay? And the only thing my grandfather ever asked, they never asked for anything in return, the only thing he ever asked of anybody that was there was, because like I said, a lot of wayward young men and women, he used to say, don't leave your beer in the refrigerator, because your grandma gets into it and it makes her mean. But other than that, everything they had was open. He just didn't want my grandma getting mean. So that was off limits. And it was like, I mean, I had a number of my friends that lived with them. And then it started being people I didn't even know. And so eventually, I had to call them aside because my grandparents didn't have anything. They weren't going on vacation. They were, you know, and everybody was coming there and eating their food. And I'd walk in the house and be like, who are you? I live here. Really? And so I called my grandma aside. And I'm like, Grandma, I think people are using you. You and Grandpa. And she looked at me and her big eyes, and she grabbed me and held me really tight. She said, oh, honey, we know they are, but that's why we're here. And it changed my perspective on a lot of things. Like I said, they were the most godly people I know. And what attracted people there wasn't that they had all of this stuff. You know what I mean? They weren't getting great meals. They were sleeping on the couch or on the floor. Could have found a better place for sure. Okay? But the biggest thing my grandpa and grandma did is they were like the Mary. If you were there, they sat at your feet, so to speak. It was like, I'm not cooking. Nothing else is going to take priority over this time that I have with you. And they would listen, and they would talk, and every single person that came there felt like they were the most important person in the world. Everything they did communicated, you matter. And that's why their house was always full. You know what I'm saying? Okay? And I bring that up because, okay, so that's something that we can do. And sometimes it's really hard to do that. Especially in this culture, in this time. It's like, it's so much easier just to throw money. Oh, you need something here. I'll give you some money. You know, go take care of it. I'll get you a room for the night. I'll give you some money. Go get something to eat. Okay? And that's okay. But it's really not the light of Christ. Okay? The light of Christ is really rest to the weary. And that it doesn't mean feeding them or sending them someplace else. Okay? It means letting them unburden themselves on you. Cool thing is, okay, those burdens, they don't stick to us. We can just take them in and lay them down. And they leave feeling significant. They feel loved and they feel cared about. And they feel the love of Jesus. That's what we're supposed to be about. That's what hospitality really is. Okay? I hope you've experienced that. I hope you've been able to give that to someone else. If you haven't, I want you to start to be intentional about that. And I'm way behind in my notes. So let me kind of finish up here with some of the hard questions, okay? So I have to ask this, okay? Is your home a safe haven? And start for the most important ones and work your way out from there, okay? Because that hospitality means that you provide a safe haven, okay? A place of rest for the weary. And it should start with your spouse. Is your house a safe haven for the one that should matter to you most of all? Is it the place where they can go and they can share deeply without being judged, without being condemned, okay? Where they look forward to being home because they know that they'll feel safe there. It's not always the case. Mind if I share from years ago? Things are changing a little bit. But I remember way back when Nicole and I were early in our marriage, and it was after Cora was born, and it seemed like there was always a crisis. And the first words always, whenever I got home, was, "Honey, just so you know, we have a huge problem." That was my greeting every single night when I came home. You laugh, but it's the truth, okay? And I got so that I would stay at work a little bit longer. And sometimes I'd take the long way home because I wasn't ready to deal with a huge crisis every single... It's like, oh my gosh, has there ever been a day where we don't have a huge problem? And so I finally had to talk with Nicole. I'm like, "Nicole, this is so hard. When I come home, could I have at least 20 minutes to just decompress?" I mean, I was teaching school at the time. All I did was solve problems. I had nothing but movement and noise all day long. When I came home, I wanted nothing but quiet and stillness. No movement, no noise. 20 minutes. I'm just going to sit down. And then, I mean, unless the house is on fire, I don't want to hear anything about it. And so but Nicole's really good, and she understood that. She's like, "Okay." Then I come home, and guess who took up where she left off? Then Cora would greet me and say, "Dad, just so you know, we have a huge problem." I'm like, "What?" Because we have a tendency to teach our kids, right, by our example. Okay, so when Mom wasn't saying it, "Cora, oh, Mom must not have recognized that you were home. Let me share. Let me greet you." Okay? It should be a place, guys, just so you know, where your spouse comes and they feel safe, and they feel cared about, and they feel significant, and they feel like they matter, and not just for what they can do, and not just for the problems that they can solve, just because of them. After that comes your kids. Is your place a safe place for your kids? I don't care whether they're grown or whether they're little, especially when they're little, but even after they're grown, it should be a place where they can come without feeling judged, without feeling condemned, and a place where they can come and share of themselves and feel understood. Because that's what it means to have hospitality. And it begins with your relatives, right? It's like Isaiah said, "Don't hide from your relatives. Offer them the same sanctuary that you would to a stranger." And then we branch out from there. Now it comes your friends and your extended family. Okay? Is your home a safe haven for everyone that comes in the door? Okay? Now, this doesn't mean that you don't set up boundaries, right, so that people don't take advantage of you. And, okay, so how can you know when somebody's crossed over your boundaries? Easy way. If you resent what you're doing, it's because they've crossed your boundary, right? The Lord loves a cheerful giver. If you've gotten to the point where now you're starting to resent giving, because they're having you do the things that they could do for themselves, they're taking advantage of all of those kinds of things, you know what I'm talking about? Okay? If you're starting to get resentful, this is the time to lay down boundaries, or you recognize that they've stepped over into a place that they shouldn't step. Because at the end of the day, you want that to deepen your relationship. You don't want it to bring harm to the relationship. And the flip side of it, guys, is we can't take advantage of people in their generosity and their hospitality. by asking them to do things that we can't do for we could already do for ourselves, or pushing them beyond their limits, or we recognize they're already weary and we're just putting our burdens on top of them when they can barely. You know, sometimes we got to flip this thing over, even if it's in their house. Sometimes I got to take the burdens back, and some of yours as well. Okay, so it kind of works both ways. And then there is the people that you hardly know. Like I said, you don't have to keep me in your house. We've always been very, very cautious about who we allow to stay with us. They've always been people that we've known pretty well. But it doesn't mean that people that we invite into our house for a short period of time, not to live there, okay, that we can't extend that hospitality, that we can't make them feel important, that we can't make them feel cared about, like they really matter. Anybody that comes into my house, I hope when they leave they feel cared about. That's part of my job, okay? And not just because Jesus tells me I'm supposed to. I want to. You know what I mean? I want, because what happens when people leave like that and they feel cared about, they love you in return. Okay? You want to be loved? You have to love that way. It's the only way that it works. And I want to finish up with this one. Quarter, read Matthew, bring up Matthew 25. There it is. Could somebody read that for me? So, go back to the Mary and Martha thing, okay? They invited Jesus into their home. And guys, how many of you, if Jesus came and knocked on the door, would invite him in? I mean, that's a no-brainer. It's like, Lord, for sure, come in and stay with me as long as you want. Let me give you something to eat. You can stay here. It would be such a great thing. It would be so cool, okay? But the interesting thing is, we don't know the form that Jesus will take when he shows up at the door. And he says right here, he says, Lord, when did we ever do those things for you? Whatever you have done for the least of these, you did for me. Okay, guys, with that being said, we're going to take communion. And also, we always do, okay, so here's an opportunity for you to reflect a little bit. And let's think about the hospitality thing. Let's think about the caring and sharing part. Because certainly before we come to Christ, and sometimes still it lingers a little bit, we have that sinful nature where we're really, really selfish. It's all about me and what I can get out of it. The cool thing, when Jesus comes into your heart, he begins to change that, and you start to see other people differently. You start to see your role differently. You start to care a little bit more, and your desires change. Okay? And guys, as we take communion, I want you to think about how you used to be. I used to be I was really good at putting people down and making them feel uncomfortable. I wasn't very good at making anybody feel comfortable. Just wasn't who I was. But I'm really hoping that now, when people are around me or they come to stay at my house, that they can feel comfortable, that they can feel like they matter, that they feel like they're somebody that's important because they are. And guys, I don't know where you're at, but I know that Christ is in the midst of changing you into that person because he intends to use you to be light in the world. So let's just think about that for just a second, and then we'll take communion together.